Hello, my name is Mike Diedrich, and this is the Veterans Through Peace radio show being broadcast on KODX 96.9 FM. This program will be archived on their website, but also eventually on VFP92.org, Veterans Through Peace, Seattle. And one of the things that Veterans for Peace does is one of our mission statements is to care for veterans and talk to veterans and include them, obviously include them in Veterans for Peace and share their views. And this show will be about a veteran by default, Jim Now, whose father died in Vietnam. Jim has been a valued member of VFP 92, our tech expert, but also you were our
secretary
for quite a while, actually. Mm-hmm. Okay, with that introduction, Jim, why don't you just go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit further than what I've just said?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So my name is Jim Now. I currently live in Northeast Ohio. Recently moved back here from Pacific Northwest, Seattle and Portland before that. I've been with Veterans for Peace, initially joined in 2015, I think. Was really involved then. Was secretary and treasurer for one year. And then involved on and off. Still maintained my associate membership. So because I wasn't in the service, I'm not actually a veteran. So they allow, gratefully, for non-veterans to be associate members. So I came back to VFP, I think around 2019 or 2020, was secretary again. And yeah, now I serve on the web tech, kind of the technology team for the local Veterans for Peace chapter in Seattle, chapter 92. As Mike mentioned, yeah, my father was killed in action in Vietnam in 1968, late July. He was only in country for, I think, about 5 weeks. I wasn't born yet. My mom was pregnant with me when he was killed. So, yeah, I grew up not knowing my father, just hearing stories from family, seeing lots of radio clippings, looking at medals. Didn't really know much about his service other than what I heard from family and family friends too.
Well, as you got older, you know, you were a teenager, older than that, and you're thinking about your dad and the war, did you have some sort of evolution in your thinking about war, militarism, and your dad?
That's a big subject. I did. Yeah. So I guess I could characterize it in like three different ways. When I was really young, as you can imagine, there was a lot of sadness and fear also, coming from my mom. I mean, what a thing to go through, losing your husband when you're, you know, pregnant with his child. I kind of grew up with that, and we didn't talk about it. We didn't even really say the word Vietnam very much at all, because it was an area that was, like I said, had a lot of sadness, and to say it was a loaded term is definitely an understatement. And then when I got to be a teenager, I became pretty anti-military, as also you could probably understand. I became really interested in conscientious objectors, really interested in like the anti-war movement, the protests against Vietnam, started listening to the music. I had a cousin that hooked me up with a bunch of records that were like from the music from Woodstock. I think it's like three or four record albums. Some Beatles and, you know, the folk music, Peter, Paul and Mary, Bob Dylan, all that stuff. And then that continued in college. I did a paper on conscientious objectors, which I really just loved that, I don't know, attitude, the courage to kind of go against the grain. It's pretty staunchly anti-military for a while. And then over the years, my attitudes changed, became more nuanced, began to be able to see kind of the complications of the question, until actually when I joined Veterans for Peace. Partially what kind of gave me different perspectives was having family members that also served, a couple of them career military. I was really good friends when I worked at Bonneville Power Administration, really good friends with a career Army guy. So I saw the life, the necessity, the service, the sense of duty and responsibility in different ways. An uncle that I was close to growing up served, I think, two tours in Vietnam. And I have a cousin who also was a career Army MP. So yeah, that kind of informed my general view of military service and how it is necessary at times. Being in VFP, also seeing, kind of the other side, although there are many sides, of the damage that militarism has done around the world, how antithetical it is to American values. So yeah, my views are they have evolved over the years.
Now, originally, this show was going to be with the participation of your uncle and also your cousin, who was your uncle was in Vietnam for two tours. Is that right?
No, I had one uncle who was in for two tours. The uncle that was gonna come on today, Uncle Dave, he was in the Army when my father was killed in action. And there is a he'll be able to tell the story better than I would be able to, but the broad strokes that I know is that he was scheduled to be deployed to Vietnam. And there he found out about that stipulation where if an older brother, or maybe it's just a family member, is killed in action in Vietnam, then nobody else in the family has to go. So he had to go through some hoops to get that in place, but he didn't have to go. He didn't have to go serve. So his I think he was actually discharged. That was approved after he appealed the initial decision.
The initial decision to exempt him from Vietnam.
Exactly. Yeah, his sergeant refused to sign the paper to let him out. So he contacted Stanton, I think it was, the congressman, to kind of appeal to him. And yeah, it happened pretty quickly after he went that route.
And you also had a cousin who was in Iraq and was there for a couple of years, couple of tours.
I feel really lucky to have the cousin who did serve there. I mean, for a variety of reasons, just there's some pride there that kind of answered the call of the country regardless of the reasoning for it. And also to hear his perspective on his time there, what he thinks about what he thought about the action, and kind of what he saw there, and whether or not he thinks it was worth it or not. I'm not going to speak for him, but I'll say that it's valuable to hear that kind of direct experience from people that were over there.
So, without being too specific, did he indicate that he had some reservations about what he did or what he saw there?
I'll say that he has views that differ from the administration at the time that got us into the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your other uncle who did not go to the, but what was his sort of take on the military?
Well, you know, Mike, this is my opinion. This is kind of how I see things now. We all grew up in rural Northeast Ohio. The major concerns were how big the bass were going to be in the lake. What time of the year is good to go out deer hunting? My father was into archery. He used to hunt with his bow. So that's what you cared about, you know.
Football too.
Maybe football. Although I don't think the local football team was all that great at the time. Yeah, so I and this is my supposition. I know my family members and my uncles especially, and they're just like really supportive, engaged in, bicycling and cars and all of the stuff of life that you care about in a rural Northeast Ohio. So to have a war show up that takes so many of, friends and family and schoolmates away from that is disruptive, to say the least.
Well, then you had, besides family, you had some friends that were in the military and or Vietnam. Were there any of your, like, you were in high school there and grew up there. Did any of them get killed or come back and
My
miss
my
your
pa yeah my parents had a lot of knew a lot of people that went to Vietnam. Some of them were killed there. A lot of them did come back. It's probably because it's maybe the nature of, the rural areas where access to college to get the educational deferment wasn't as easy to come by. Yeah, there are a lot of people that went and served and came back, and some of them didn't.
Some of them didn't what?
Didn't make it back.
Oh, yeah. But that wasn't something that you talked about much with your friends, no?
No, not at all. Growing up, it was, like I said, there was this notion that my father was a hero, because he was killed in combat, and we pretty much left it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as a by the way, I was actually drafted, but I was in school and flunked out of college twice and lost my student deferment and was dragged sort of kicking and screaming into the military, and then I did something stupid, which all my friends, a couple of my friends who had been in the military said, just take the draft. Don't go for another year because you think that you're going to get a better deal. And they were sadly correct. I didn't get out of Vietnam and I didn't get really a better deal, although I was, as a military intelligence interrogator, I suppose I'm marginally better than carrying a pack around the boonies. But I saw a little bit of that. But anyway, my experience in Vietnam led me directly to anti-war work because of that experience as a sadness and anger of being witness to that and being a participant of the war. So I didn't really have any second thoughts about it. It kind of evolved, but I was one of those people who actually knew, I spoke Vietnamese at the time, knew these people, so I had more of a connection to them than some people who had just spent all their time shooting them or getting shot.
Yeah,
I
that's
go
what I
ahead.
was kind of wondering. That prompted a question for me. Do you think because of your the role that you had there, you saw a lot of different things that maybe more likely to turn you toward anti-war than maybe somebody who was in, infantry and a lot more day-to-day combat.
Well, the thing was that those people who were on more front line than I was, I mean, but as a, somebody who didn't really carry a weapon that often, I saw a lot of people get killed, and I was sort of peripherally involved in firefights and bombings. But my experience was that I had, because of my contact with Vietnamese all every day, and my ability to speak Vietnamese, I got to know them as people, and it wasn't something abstract. Although somebody who is in the field and is killing people, that's about as intimate as you can get, I suppose. I don't know. It's always kind of a different experience depending on who you talk to. But in retrospect, I think I was lucky to be able to have that experience and to view them as people, which actually makes it a little bit more difficult because considering what we did over there. The year that I was there, which was almost all of 1968, there were 14,000 Americans killed, which people these days think, God, that's just astonishing that there many, there was every week there was 300 or 400 dead printed names of dead printed in the paper in May alone of 1968, where I was there. There were over 2,000 Americans killed in that month, which was the
In
highest
1 month.
month on one month.
Jeez.
So, and that was 68, but the war didn't end for 4 years. We started withdrawing. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but I mean, in retrospect, it's just astonishing.
It does. You were mentioning people personally seeing faces. So I went to Viet so in 2015 I went to Vietnam. That's when I, kind of started to face and just was curious, wanted to learn more. Around that time, my mom, and I didn't even know these tapes existed, she gave me a couple of tapes, the old reel-to-reel tapes that she and my father used to exchange back and forth instead of writing letters. They would write letters too, but they exchanged these reel-to-reel tapes. So she gave me one, and it had a recording of his voice from Vietnam that he made when he was there. And I'd never heard his voice before in my life, so it was really a special thing that my mom did for me and gave me. And that was one of the things that he mentioned is how other GIs were treating the local people, the Vietnamese. And I mean that's kind of a basic human kindness to treat other people well, especially, I mean, I think if you're in their country and you recognize that, and that's one of the things that he mentioned.
That they were that he, there was he showed some empathy towards the Vietnamese then.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. The villagers, regular people, farmers. The d during that trip to Vietnam, and
Was
I
that
went
with Peace Trees?
Peace Trees. Yep,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah. Through my cousin who was the MP, and through Peace Trees, I was able to meet people who and make some connections who actually served. So two things. One of them was people who were sort of historians, like record archivists that found the hill and the coordinates of where the battle was that my father was killed in. And then the other one was got some connections of people who served with him in Vietnam, his commanding officer, the XO, and a couple other guys too. And I talked to four of them before I went to Vietnam, and they told me stories of what the battle was like that day, when him and this other guy that he was in country with were killed in action. So I got those coordinates, and then as part of the Peace Trees trip, the Geraldine, the founder, and Quang Ly, the in-country director, and I went over to and Lisa, my wife at the time, went over, found this hill, and walked around it. At first, it looked like just a hill out in the middle of nowhere at the end of a canal. Really peaceful. Could hear, the insects and birds, and see rice paddies down below. Saw a girl walking her cow grazing up on this hill. It was a really nice setting. But as we started walking around, we could see things that really indicated that there was a battle there, like perfectly round, deep craters, maybe 10 feet deep, just like this conical shape into the ground. This like wall of vegetation that when we got up closer to it, it was like a concrete, sort of a concrete wall, like a barrier. A couple other areas where it was like this terraced big flat spot, and then up higher was like another terraced big flat spot, maybe for a artillery gun or something like that. So yeah, that was really a special thing to be able to do that. Yeah, Peacetrees has, as you can imagine, has a lot of connections with people that served there, and know a lot of people that do a lot of different things, like this guy that found the records, the coordinates of the hill.
Now, did you eventually talk more about Vietnam and/or your dad with your mom?
I really work hard to try to respect where people are. Like, I don't throw shade on anybody's service. Growing up, I mean, it was a point of pride and reverence, and I guess dedication to the memory of the people who served, who did their duty. So I try to continue that. Growing up, we always went every Memorial Day, went to my father's grave and cleared it is one of those flat graves, like not a big monument that's up out of the ground, but like flush with the ground. So we would clear the grass around it and kind of dig out the grooves of the letters where grass and dirt and everything got in there, and got it looking really good. So that was kind of a sacred time to do that on Memorial Day. And as much as possible, I try to, not put my own views on his memory when it comes to my mom and my family. And I've gotten to a place where I can keep them, I don't know, honor both. So both of them are true, right? I mean, how Vietnam was, the reasons that people were sent there, the value of it, the damage that it's done to our society, all of that is different than, well, than our standing in the world, I think. All of that is stands apart from the fact that he, gave his life for his country. Both of them are true, and I try to honor both of those.
I guess what I wanted to ask is it did your mother's opinion about the war or feelings about the war evolve or change?
I don't know. The relationship with my mom, I'm really grateful to say that I have a good relationship with her. It's not an area that I really bring up too much with her. Like I said, it's a more personal connection that we have. I mean, with her husband, my father. Don't really talk too much about it, to be honest. About, the political ramifications of the war and all that stuff that went on around it.
Well, yeah. I guess what I was interested about her sort of personal feelings, not necessarily a political discussion. But that's something that you've been able to do or wanted to do or she wanted to do. How about your other relatives? I mean, you came from not only your cousin and uncles, I don't know, and then friends. You're quite a few people who were involved in the military, friends and family. Sort of sort of a different experience than me. I was the first male member of my family who had served in the military since I had a half a dozen people who were in the Civil War from Minnesota. But nobody, my dad was exempt because he was a railroad worker in World War II. So, different experience. Although, when I got out of the service and I was home for, I wasn't home for more than an hour when my mother, who was a smart woman, very smart, a school teacher, she asked me, she says, "Now, are you a war criminal?"
Oh man.
And yeah, and so I said, "Well," I kind of hedged my bets. He says, "Well, you know, I didn't torture anybody, but I knew people who did. I was witness to an awful lot of people getting killed, and it became clear following years that my viewpoint changed, and I did my best to explain as best to my parents what that meant, and then it was kind of sad for them because they saw that I was a different person and angry and sad and acting out and drinking. I mean, I didn't draw sober red for about 6 years, so I was kind of a mess. I was sorry in retrospect that they're both gone now, of course, that they had to see that in me, and I'm sure it made them a little sad. I was not the same person. So I don't know if that dynamic at all happened with your uncle and your cousin. At least it was, I mean, it wasn't because they didn't really talk about it that much. It wasn't sort of visible, but acting out was not something that was obvious to anybody that you knew.
Well, my family is an immigrant family. My grandma and grandpa immigrated on the one side from Slovenia in 1920, I think. World War I was going on. My grandpa was in World War I. He was in combat, suffered a gas attack, had to have mustard gas, it was. Had to have some of his stomach taken out because it was eaten away, and that affected him physically and I think mentally for the rest of his life.
So he was with the Austrian army?
I against Italy.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Austro.
I believe so. So yeah, I mean the effects of war of and before that, I mean that area. That part of Europe, I mean, it's sort of like on the pathway between Austria-Hungary, Italy, Turkey. I mean, it changed hands quite a few times, so no stranger to war and battle there. And then my uncle was in, gosh, Korea. My other uncle. So yeah, there's been military service. Uncle Johnny was, I believe, in Korea. And then yeah, Uncle Joe was in Vietnam. And then Brad in Iraq and another cousin who was in the Marines. My sister was in the Marines. She was actually one of two of the first female helicopter crew chiefs in the Marines. So yeah, quite a bit of military service in my family.
Well, boy, that's actually quite a litany of family members. That would actually make some interesting reading if you ever had the energy to actually could do something as simple as what I ended up doing going back to Vietnam, and that's just interviewing people. Say, say whatever you want to say, speak in the microphone if you want to and make it through. But you don't come with any sort of preconceived ideas about what they should or shouldn't say, but just tell us what you want to say. That's basically what this show is about, and hopefully maybe at a later date we can get some more of your relatives to do that. But it's a kind of an historical record in the same sense that your dad's tapes were probably to you very, very poignant and valuable.
Oh yeah, incredibly so.
So your relatives, like your cousin and your uncle, they didn't say much about your dad's death or service or That wasn't something you talked about.
Yeah, no, like I said, our family was pretty I don't know, tight-knit, incredibly loyal, caring. I mean, you really felt like you were welcome. I think for the most part. Unless you piss somebody off, then it's a different story. But that's kind of how it was. I mean, there wasn't a lot of political discussion of whether or not we should be in Vietnam or not. It was talking about, Jim, my father, and what he used to do, how he used to get poison ivy really bad, how he used to, different family stories. That's most of what I heard
Yeah.
growing up. It wasn't anything else. I didn't really look at things from sort of the outside until I was I did a canoe trip in North Carolina with this guy Norm that actually used to work with Uncle Joe who did the two tours in Vietnam. Norm and I did a canoe trip on a 4th of July weekend down the Cape Fear River, 65 miles. We ended up in Wilmington on the day of the fireworks for 4th of July that they blasted off on the deck of the USS North Carolina, that's moored right there in Cape Fear. And it was then that Norm was, saying stuff like my father was a hero and, he gave his life for our freedom and in service to our country. So I really started to look at things from a different perspective. I have different views about it now, but looking at it that way was it just kind of helped inform my view of his service and service in general. Yeah.
Well, I've known, as you can imagine, quite a few people who were served in the military. And in fact, which is common to hear, it says, thank you for your service. I try to encourage people to say, welcome home. And the reason I say that is because of service for many people who were in Vietnam or other military or wars. What they did or saw there was something that they particularly didn't want to be thanked for. That they did it out of patriotism or because they had to is one thing, but getting thanks for going someplace across halfway across the world and shooting strangers is not something that you want to be thanked for.
Yeah, I get that, Mike. One of my cousins, I thought it was doing what you're supposed to do, and I thanked him for his service on Memorial Day. No, not Memorial Day. Veterans Day. Yeah, November 11th, and he kind of had that same attitude. He wasn't too crazy about being thanked for that, for his service. So that was kind of an eye opener for me too. Yeah.
Well, I understand people that they want to say something like that, which is supportive and intimate, really, sort of in a way. But the it's also a way to say, well, thank you for your service. Now shut up. I don't want to hear about how you shot or tortured or blew up people or something like that. That's not something that I want to hear. And some of my dinner conversations with some of my friends have sort of blown up some dinner parties because they wanted to, I'm particularly affected by Blue Angels, which I saw combat aircraft blowing up people, and I've got a different perspective. People say it's so pretty. Well, you know what those things are? Those are military aircraft that they're tactical support fighter bombers, and they drop bombs, big ones. And this is what it looks like on the ground. It doesn't, they're not pretty in blue. So, as you, I'll send a prologue along too for this piece. I did this May Girl thing, which I'll let you look at. But one of the things that I've found, which is probably something you didn't experience at all or from your relatives, was that my experience of what I saw in Vietnam, which is maybe typical or not atypical, is I wanted to take this experience and shove it down people's throats. Just, this is what it was like. Don't give me this shit, you know. This is what it was like.
You mean to like let them know what it was actually like being over
Yeah,
there?
yeah. And not mince my words at all.
Hmm.
And I'm kind of, ever since the Boy Scouts, a kind of a profane person. Catholic, I don't know. But so, you know, I don't mince words if I, but I, you know, I've learned to be a little bit more polite about this. But if people want me to know, so, well, what was that like? Because, well, it was hot and it was very bloody, you know.
Yeah.
I never did get used to the heat. Yeah. So,
So that you worked on a book for a couple of years, right?
yeah, about 10 years ago, I went back to Vietnam for the first time, 2003. And because I was in military intelligence, I talked to quite a few people. One of them was this guy who had participated in the attack on the American embassy. This is 1968 in Tet, which was a def the Tet it, overall was a huge defining moment in the war, probably the defining moment. And in particular, the attack on the American embassy, which was considered to be invulnerable. And these 30 or 16 soldiers, NLF soldiers,
NLF
attacked
is the
and National
North.
Liberation Front, National Liberation Front, colloquially known as Viet Cong, but their terminology was National Liberation Front. So
Okay.
you
And that's
that's
who the US
that's
was
what
fighting against
yeah
in
yeah
Vietnam War, yeah.
so you have to call it's appropriate to call people the names that they want to be called.
Yeah.
It's sort of like pronouns these days. So I mean, they attacked the embassy, blew a 3 foot hole in a wall with C4, went in there and had a 6 hour firefight that left 13 of them dead. And you know, that was covered fairly well with the news. And they say, well, you know, that was shocking. Westmoreland is walking around the place with all these dead bodies in his starch khakis and saying, well, you know, this was a failed attempt. Well, it was not a failed attempt. And one of the people that I survived that thing was a guy by the name of Ba Dinh, one of his many aliases. So I went back to Vietnam. Says there's a crazy sort of idea that maybe this guy is still alive. And I went back there, and it was sort of purely by choice and karmic sort of propinquity. I happened to talk to a guy who was and I explained to him what my, you know, who I was looking for and that sort of thing, and exchanged emails and that sort of thing. I went back to the hotel, and that later that afternoon, he sent me an email with a included a link to an essay, a long essay, actually, a piece that a army major had written about the Tet Offensive. It was a long historical piece. And in the bibliography was a citation from Military Intelligence Report on Ba Dinh, authored by Specialist E4 Michael Diedrich. And I said, Jesus Christ, where the hell did this come from? Well, in 2002 or three, the archives had released all this stuff, this information, to the public. So it was a matter of
Right.
going to the National Archives and rooting around there. So, and it turned out that I talking to some other people, that Ba Dinh had been killed in a no ir irony in this really by a Russian truck in the traffic in 1976.
Oh,
Well, he
really?
survived the war and
Oh,
survived prison,
gosh.
only to die in a traffic accident. But
Yeah.
because I knew that head of that connection, I met some other people, and they said, well, you can't talk to him, obviously, but we know some other people who served with him who were in the same unit. He was a Viet Dong, so-called a Special Forces Ranger. And so they gave me access to meet these people, and I ended up interviewing eight soldiers. Three of them were women, two of them were very senior old commanders,
Wow.
and wrote their interviewed them with the help of some interpreters guys, but by that time my Vietnamese was almost gone, and wrote a book about them. Basically, I was just an editor, and I wrote down what they said, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, and that. Oh, this is.
Yeah, that's the one you published. What, 2 years ago?
Voice.
3 years ago?
Yeah, 2022. Yeah.
Oh,
Southern
23, just last year. Yeah. Okay, can you show that
24.
again?
Sure.
What was the name of that? Southern
Southern
Voices.
Voice,
Okay.
Vietnam and the National Liberation Front,
Wow.
which was published by University of Kentucky Press, which is an academic press, you know, a mainstream publisher. And the interest, one of the interesting things about the book is that it was published in Vietnamese also, which is just unbelievably rare. And as are these interviews with these people, there are just doesn't exist any sort of in English. Also in the book, it's done in Vietnamese
Yeah.
for these former soldiers and what they thought and what they did. So it's a small piece of what a larger piece of the war, but basically fairly representative considering that they were three women. Most people didn't realize that there were a lot of so-called VC NLF soldiers who were women and very good soldiers too. I mean, these are people that you wouldn't be afraid to walk down a dark alley with because they knew how to shoot.
Yeah, wow.
And two of the guys were senior commanders who had been around since the French, and their story goes back a long time.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's an interesting read. My backstory is kind of interesting too, with you know, how I got there. I don't know. Do you have a copy of this book?
I don't. No, I'd love to have one though. I'd love to read it.
Send you one.
Okay, thanks. I'm curious if it has sold, how well it's sold in Vietnam. Or I guess another question would be too, like when you were researching the material for the book during the interviews, what the attitudes were. The reason I ask is because when we were visiting Vietnam, people were, well, first off, super welcoming. They understood that a lot of us were there as sort of a information and also like a healing sort of a process, to kind of uncover the mystery and the stuff that we don't know, to kind of see things firsthand. It can kind of really help to heal some wounds there. But for them themselves, especially the younger people, they're like, and this is a paraphrase, the attitude was like, that was a long time ago. The war's not here anymore. We have other things in front of us to be concerned with. So kind of like, you know, let's move on at some point. So I was curious if people were, you know, if they were really receptive to talk to you about these things, or if there was more of an attitude like, that was a long time ago, let's move on.
Oh, no. For these people were my contemporaries. You know, we were in the same war.
Yeah.
With the exception of the two older guys who were, you know, 20 years older. No, I came to the table as an anti-war veteran. They knew that. And also because I also knew this guy, Ba Dinh, who was actually a famous person in Vietnam, a very famous person, certainly within the, you know, military hierarchy. You know, he was, they actually made me sort of a hyped up sort of series about the Viet Dong was a little bit more, you know, Hollywood-y. But many of the people of my age or then knew about Ba Dinh and knew about the Tet Offensive and knew all that. And since I came to as an anti-war veteran, says, you know, I was sorry about what this country did to Vietnam. And they accepted that, and they understood that you were there in Vietnam because you were told to go there. And they differentiated between somebody like myself and the other soldiers and the administration. They're clear democracy.
Wow, okay.
They made that. They're all very political too. These are people who are communists and they were involved in politics. And probably the most, for me, touching this sort of thing was they treated me like a comrade, like a fellow soldier in arms.
Hmm.
And brought me to tears a couple of times, you know, just to be sort of that, and
Wow.
I put the Vietnamese men are not shy about showing friendship, they'll hold your hand, you know.
Yeah.
And that happened a few times. It was kind of startling when I, before I sort of accepted it and appreciated that gestures.
Man,
So,
so that is really remarkable. So even though at one point you were sworn enemies, killing or contributing to the death of, you know, friends, comrades, fellow serving, you know, people serving with in their country, they will, well, I mean, could you, would you say that they welcomed you? And
They welcomed me as a comrade in the war. And even though I was on the other side, I was still somebody who shared the experience
yeah.
from a different perspective, but nonetheless shared the experience of the war. And was sympathetic, obviously sympathetic to them as resistors of American sort of colonialism, imperialism,
Yeah.
as they would say. So, and the other thing was that I got a lot of Vietnamese to help me with the translations and interpretations because the audio was recorded on a tape, and then that tape had to be transcribed into a Vietnamese transcript, and that transcript, that raw transcript, had to be translated into English. And then I took that English transcript, which was still raw data, and made it readable without changing the content.
Got it.
And that was that was what was published eventually. And it's what I actually talked to, went back and forth with the press and getting in to do this. They were almost backed out of it twice, but finally decided to do it, which is really a singularly unique event on war history, because I'm not, this is not just another history of the war or even my experience of it, but there's thousands of books about Americans in Vietnam, what they did there. Some of them are better written than others, but still, it's a lot of it is mostly just, you know, what did you do in the war, Daddy? That sort of thing, you know.
Right.
But some of them are actually sort of more intimate as far as the war. But I wanted to, which I think I did, was give this point of view of their point of view, not mine. And that's how I approached their interviews. I says, this is what I want to do. And they took a while. They sort of, for some of them, says, well, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You know? And I sort of had to explain myself and my political point of view. And they all accepted that and were very open. It's really kind of remarkable reading.
Well, that is a great question. I mean, the war ended, you know, decades ago. Many people kind of leave that in the past, go on with their lives, try to forget about it, as sometimes impossible that is. I'm curious why you keep going. I mean, you've kind of dedicated your life and your work still on a daily basis.
Well,
For the work of,
one thing is about
go
sort of
ahead.
anti-war work generally, you know, and that's not just Vietnam, of course. But the other thing, as a undergraduate degree holder in history, I am sympathetic to the obligation of witnessing history, and I had an opportunity to do this. They offered me these people to interview. And I said, well, I mean, in retrospect, it was a lot of work, and I might not have done it otherwise. But I felt I had an obligation, one for sort of an obligation to history, as a, somebody who studied history, and two, as a veteran of Vietnam, I had an obligation to their voices, you know. So that's what I was motivation for it. And also that I wanted to this book to be available to Americans who don't know anything about Vietnam. And it's surprising, it's really surprising to me among my contemporaries, as people who are roughly around my age who were adults during the war, how little they know about the war. You know, just fucking unbelievable how ignorant that they are. You know, and how brutal it was. You know, I mentioned those casualties. I mean, you go back to 1967 and think 1968, because what would you think of these days when we were in another war where they're killing 400 people a day,
Oh gosh,
Americans?
it'd be, yeah, it'd be
To
tragedy
say
after tragedy, yeah.
nothing of the thousands, tens of thousands of Vietnamese who died. So,
Yeah.
you know, the only thing I can compare it to is what the Israelis are doing in West and Gaza. It says, you know, they kill 25,000 people and they don't even blink.
Yeah. Over a
So,
couple of months.
yeah. So, anyway, I will send you, I've got your address someplace. I'll send you a copy of the book.
Okay,
Actually,
thanks.
I might give you two because some of your relatives might be interested in it too.
Yeah, yep, totally. Yeah, they would.
We're just about out of time, but I wanted to thank you for doing this, and maybe we can do it again with some of your relatives. It's kind of a unique experience, really. I mean, unique perspective for the show, but also for you as a son of a veteran. You know, I've described one of the guys I know, a Vietnam veteran, he was talking about his family members and talking about his wife, and she says, well, she's a Vietnam veteran. And that is because she lives through his experience.
Yeah.
And I'd say that that apart probably applies to you a little bit, especially if you're hanging around with people like me. So,
Well, that has been really one of the, I don't know. I'm really grateful for Veterans for Peace to be able to work so closely with people in this chapter. Everybody. And that I have been for so long because I can see, you know, it kind of informs my perspective. On the one hand, I mean, I can see what it was like somewhat a little bit through your experience, and also, you know, to kind of contribute to supporting the mission that, I mean, I feel like I'm kind of an ancillary support, but that you guys that work hard day in, day out to kind of for the reasons that you mentioned and others to get the message of peace out there. So that, you know, I don't know. The hope is that people who are mostly concerned with the things that humans should be concerned with, family and hunting and playing and, you know, swimming and everything else, can continue to do that and don't have to worry about being shipped off somewhere and might not be able to make it back.
thanks for those remarks, Jim. The other thing is that this chapter and the other chapters, or VFP generally, would not exist without the huge support it had for so-called associate members. It just wouldn't exist to put in a lot of work. And personally, I'm thank you. And the other thing, other I've thanked other people who have done the similar sort of work, and it's like a sort of we're comrades in activists and anti-war work, and I'm very grateful to people like you, or the chapter wouldn't exist.
Oh, good. Thanks for
So,
saying that. Glad to do it.
so that's just about it for this radio show. My name is Mike Diedrich with Jim Now, in a conversation about what it means to be a family of veterans. K broadcast on KODX 96.9 FM, also available through VFP92.org.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate the
All right.
opportunity to talk.
Thank you, Jeff.